The best and overlooked books of 2017. What's on your list? Look at the lists of the best-selling books of the year and you'll notice some trends. Young adult books, including John Green's latest and Harry Potter books, dominate the list. Perennial bestsellers Dan Brown, John Grisham, and David Baldacci are there too. A couple biographies, one of Ulysses S. Grant and another of Leonardo da Vinci, are near the top. And several political books make the list. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, what did you read this year? Did you find yourself craving a good heart-pounding thriller? Are you looking for answers to difficult questions of culture and politics? Is there one book that you can't wait to talk about, you can't stop thinking about? Today, it's your chance to share that on our annual Best and Overlooked Books program. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Looking for a book recommendation, or have you recently read a book you couldn't put down or really made you think? Well, today is your day. We're going to learn about the top books of the past year, including some hidden gems and overlooked titles, and we can't wait to hear your recommendations. With me today to talk about books, Elizabeth Pohl. She is director of the Lithgow Public Library in Augusta. Ari Gerson is the owner of Longfellow Books in Portland. And Josh Bodwell is executive director of the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance. And as always, we want to hear from you. Are you looking for gift ideas? Maybe a gift for yourself? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Thank you all for being here for this fun show. Betsy, I'm going to start with you. Have you noticed any trends this year of folks coming into the library wanting certain kinds of books, maybe something different than in years past?
Well, I'm seeing a lot of, we were just talking about this before the show, I'm seeing a lot of adults who are looking at young adult literature. So it's not just teens that are reading that genre or genres under that umbrella. A lot of interest in crime novels and memoirs and biographies. Those are the things that we see a lot of the adults checking out in the library.
And it's interesting about young adult novels because I was this morning looking through a bunch of the top best-selling lists and top books of the year, and lots of young adult novels on those lists, which suggests that more than just young adults are buying them.
Yeah, in our newly expanded library, we have a brand new teen room, and it's amazing how many adults are going in there to catch the latest entry in one of the series that's so popular.
All right, what about you, Ari? What are you seeing as far as people not checking out books but actually buying them? What kind of trends?
I think one of the biggest trends this year has actually been folks asking for something a little bit lighter, something a little bit less dystopian or end of the world or complex. I think a lot of people this year in particular are looking for something that they can escape into and just kind of maybe forget for a couple of hours and relax.
Escapism. What about humor? Is it more romance or crime? Or,
you know, I think it covers across it goes across all the categories, but it's really, I don't want, you know, I think that in a lot of ways a novel to be serious has ended up needing a very tragic element, and I think that folks this year maybe have wanted something that's a little bit lighter. Good character development, good writing, but maybe doesn't have to be tragic at the end of the day.
All right. Josh, you are lucky enough to know all the Maine writers. Another banner year for Maine writers.
Yeah, it was a big year in general, but also in particular that some of the titans kind of the Maine literary scene all had books. So Anne Beattie had a new book of short stories, her 20th book. Richard Ford had his first nonfiction book, his memoir. Richard Russo had his second collection of short stories, Trajectory. And Elizabeth Strout published her first linked collection of stories since Olive Kittredge. So kind of a giant year for the titans of Maine to all have books at once.
Ari, do people come into the bookstore looking for Maine authors? And do they, especially these names?
Those names, but also, I mean, you know, Paul Dworen had a book out this year. Bruce Coffin is another big name sort of coming. He's got a new great Portland detective series started. You know, there's a wealth of known writers in Portland, but there's so many phenomenal writers that people don't necessarily know about. summertime in particular, you know, we have so many new folks in the store, and they're always asking for good local Maine writers.
Okay, well, it's interesting you said Paul Dworin, because Betsy, he made your list.
He did make my list. I think he's a rising star in the crime genre, and I have to admit, when I read the first of his series, The Poacher's Son, I wasn't sure I was going to like it because I'm not a hunter or a fisher, you know, Maine game warden. I just couldn't imagine why that would be interesting to me. But I'd heard such good things, and his character, Mike Bowditch, who's the Maine game warden, has just enough badness and just enough faults to make him super interesting. And I think it's the character development of his family, his girlfriend, the various state police that enter into the investigations that just make it so engaging. Plus, it is a very authentically Maine story. They're all that way. And so the newest one is Knife Creek, and that's number 8 in the series. It starts with him and his girlfriend in the woods hunting feral pigs to try to get rid of that terrible pestilence in western Maine before they really make a grander appearance in Maine. And while he's doing that, he discovers the body of an infant in a shallow grave. And what that leads to is more investigations that obviously show that things are not as they seem, which is very common in crime novels. But his authentic Maine setting and the reappearance of someone who thought to have disappeared 4 years previously just makes it a really gripping novel. I love it.
Would you recommend people start with this or go back and start at the beginning?
You know, they all can be read on their own as standalones, but I think with any good series, it's always good to start at the beginning or to at least go back and read the first ones where the characters are introduced. In his case, the backstories of Mike Bowditch become important as the series goes on.
Okay. Josh, you have a very formal and nicely organized list, which we've already posted on our Facebook page. We're going to add all the rest of the recommendations after the program. But of your Baker's Dozen, Bodwell's Baker's Dozen, which rises to the top? I'm going to make you choose among your children.
Yeah. That's so polite of you to say it's formal. It seems utterly informal to me. I just want to echo Ari first real quick, as he was saying. You know, I just named a couple of those sort of internationally celebrated Maine writers, but he's absolutely right in terms of the crime. He named, you know, Paul and Bruce, but also Jim Heyman had a new book this year.
Oh,
Chris
he's
Holm,
great. Yeah.
Kate Flora had two books, I think. Wes McNair, our former poet laureate, had a new book of poetry. Yeah, I just had that little window to name four, but yeah, it's an embarrassment of riches.
It is.
It really, really incredible to, you know, say a Maine author is really a U.S. author or a world author. So,
yeah.
Josh, but still, you have to recommend a book now.
So I'll pick a couple. One old book that I had missed for a novel back in 2009 was Philip Meyer's American Rust. His next book after that was The Sun, which is now being either developed or is maybe even on the air now. I think that maybe Amazon or someone's done a series out of that. But American Rust is set in a fictionalized but very believable version of Pennsylvania Rust Belt, told sort of in a Faulknerian sort of way from about 6 different points of view. Probably not the book for people that come in and see Ari and say, I want something on the lighter side. when I read it, you know, written in 2007 or 2008, I thought, man, this is still what's happening in America in terms of what we see happening through those formal industrial areas. And then another one I want to name that's an old one that I discovered this year is The Orchard by Adele Crockett Robinson, or Kitty, as she goes by in the book. This is such an incredible book. She was coming of age during the Depression. Her father died suddenly. She had a white-collar job at the Worcester Art Museum. She left that to go home to the family farm in Ipswich and run the orchard that her father loved. Hmm. And many years later, in the 50s, she sat down and started to write this memoir for the first time, left it unfinished because of life circumstances. In the 90s, and she died, her daughter found this amongst her papers and got this memoir published. It is just spectacular, spectacular book.
And each story behind it. Okay, Ari, your turn. Give us a recommendation.
So I guess I'm going to do two. The first one I would say is Spoonbenders by Daryl Gregory. And I went into this one actually fairly skeptical because, you know, we get I don't know, we probably get 20 or 30 advanced copies on any given day from publishers, and they come with promotional material. And this one said, if you loved Adventures of Cavalier and Clay, you're going to love this. And I loved Adventures of Cavalier and Clay. And I was like, you can't compare something to that and not back it up. So I was pretty skeptical. And I got to say, it was fantastic. It's this crazy family with this kind of huckster patriarch who's, you know, whose wife had some paranormal capabilities. The kids do. The grandkids do. They're involved with the CIA. They're involved with other sort of, you know, hucksters in the country. And the characters are just vivid. The dialogue's fantastic. You will inevitably fall in love with at least a couple of them. And I just loved the novel. It was fantastic. The other one that it wasn't a 2017 book. It was a 2016 book, but it's out in paperback now. And it had the misfortune. It's called Underground Airlines by Ben Winters.
Oh, yes.
So this had the misfortune of being released about 3 weeks before Underground Railroad, which basically sucked all of the air out of anything with Underground in the title or anything having to do with the topic. But it's a great book. And, you know, the concept is that the Civil War didn't end the way that that we thought it did, that there are still four states that do have slavery. And it's the country, you know, sort of set in this whole other future. And I got to say, topically right now, it's pretty relevant. And it's fascinating to read. And I think if people didn't get to see it, it's worth taking a second look, even though it was a 2016 book.
Okay, so I'm going to back up just a little bit now. We'll get more recommendations in just a second. But I want to ask those of you who are in the business of choosing books, because you have to choose what to stock, and Betsy, you have to choose what to put on the shelves. I understand there's something between 600,000 and 1 million titles released in the U.S. Per year. No way to start to scratch the surface. How do you figure out what to order for Longfellow Books?
I defer to my phenomenal staff.
How does your staff decide what to order for Longfellow Books?
You know, it's I'd love to say there's a science to it, but there's not. It's part instinct, it's part experience, and it's part luck. You know, a lot of it is trying books. A lot of it is people requesting books. Like you said, we can't stock 1 million titles, new titles every year. So on some level we have to, you know, if we see four or five people in a week asking for a book, we know that we missed it. You know, but we try to bring in one or two of as much as we can. You know, we try to identify the ones we think will be most, relevant to people and most engaging for people. There are great tools out there that will tell you what a lot of other bookstores like yours are buying. There's actually some wonderful technology out there to help booksellers like ours. I think it's an instinctual thing as much as anything, truthfully.
Can I just, Ari's not going to say that. I want to chime in in support of independent bookstores real quick. So he's talking about that data that the chains can run and sort of, you know, crunch some numbers and figure out what to order. You know, all independent bookstores, especially Maine's, you know, whether you go into Longfellow or Print or Hello or a Sherman's or any of Maine's independent bookstores, they all have personalities that you are not going to find at a chain. And the book selection is going to be different, and it's going to reflect that community, that taste of that group of people. And that's what makes them incredibly special.
I love it when they have staff picks.
Exactly.
You know, my eyes go straight to those. Okay, Betsy, so a library, is it the same kind of calculation or a little different?
It's a little different. I think it's more art than science, but at the same time, you know, we're always looking at what people are borrowing. We're listening to what people are requesting. We rely on certain review sources. We all have our favorites. But I think the one different thing is we're not trying to sell or make a profit. And so the other imperative is to try to create a balanced and enduring collection. So there might be something that's not a bestseller, but is likely to be kind of the authority on one subject or one person. And it's good to add that so that you have that foundation. But it really is, a lot of it is instinctual too for us librarians.
Do you have to get rid of a book for every book you bring into the library?
I would say in our previous incarnation, where we were so cramped, that was pretty much the way it was. But with a little bit of room to grow now, we are less that way. However, public libraries are dynamic, and their collections are very dynamic. They're healthier when you do weed out the things that aren't moving or are outdated or just in terrible shape.
Okay, so back to one more recommendation from each of you before the break. Mm. Maybe we'll talk about nonfiction. Josh, what about nonfiction? I know you sort of have a weak spot for fiction, but you read some nonfiction,
right? I read a lot of nonfiction. Okay. I'll talk later about the worst nonfiction book I read this year. But first, I'll start with the best one I read this year, which I'm picking old stuff. I'm picking old stuff right now because it's new to me. But this is a book that's been consistently in print since 1972. It's called The Summer Book by Tove Jansson, who is a Swedish writer. And this is a sort of an autobiographical novel. It's not quite pure memoir, set in the Gulf of Finland, mostly starring a young girl, 7-8 years old, and her grandmother on this outer island. It is gorgeous and spare and crystal clear. If you love that kind of relationship, grandmother, granddaughter, nature, and having your heart broken, I'd recommend this book.
You love having your heart broken.
Who doesn't love
that? Ari, what about you? Nonfiction, please.
I would say Astrophysics for People in a Hurry, Neil deGrasse Tyson. It's exactly what it is meant to be. I think you read it probably in an hour and a half. And, you know, as only he can, he takes you from the start of the universe to today. And you'll walk away learning a few things you didn't know, and if you didn't know anything, you'll learn more than that. But it's a great read. It, I find the universe terrifying. I don't understand. You know, he starts off with, everything started, a millionth of the size of the period at the end of the sentence. I find that concept terrifying. It doesn't make sense to me. But the rest of the book sort of eases you out of that. So it's, I think it's fantastic.
And your turn, Betsy.
Well, I have to say that one that he just mentioned has been super popular at the library also. My top pick for nonfiction is Killers of the Flower Moon, The Osage Murders and the Birth of the FBI by David Grann. And this is the author of The Lost City of Z, which was made into a movie. He specializes in doing deep research into sort of little known historical stories and then turning them into nonfiction that kind of reads like a novel. But anyway, this one, in the 1870s, the Osage tribe was removed from about 100 million acres on the plains to a reservation in Oklahoma. And even they said the land was so poor that they couldn't imagine anybody wanting them to ever take it away from them. But decades later, oil was discovered on that land and the tribe became extremely wealthy. For a while, their individual members had the highest per capita wealth in the country. But there began to be a series of unexplained murders, and there were so many of them, it led to federal involvement. And so there's sort of a parallel crime story where it talks about the investigation into the murders and the birth of the modern FBI. So it's a social history, it's a crime story, but it's a fascinating read, and he just has a gift for making history interesting.
Well, I will mention that all three of my guests have wonderfully provided a list. So even the books that we don't get to talk about on the air today will be on their list, and we'll be posting that on our Maine Calling Facebook page after the program. We do need to take a quick break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does the Maine Health Cancer Care Network, assembled with one simple mission, to provide Mainers a relentless partner in their fight to overcome this disease right here at home.
Acting can be a rough business.
I thought he was going to knife him.
Oh, I would have broke other directors' fingers right off.
I'm Alec Baldwin, host of Here's the Thing from WNYC. Coming up on the show, candid conversations with Viggo Mortensen, Mickey Rourke, and John Turturro.
I'm going to be brutal.
And you can join us for Here's the Thing Sunday evening at 7 o'clock.
This is Guy Raz. I'm an ideas guy, and maybe it goes without saying, but public radio is one of America's greatest ideas, right up there with the invention of the internet and the minivan. And did you know that all three of those great ideas can come together? See, you can use the internet to donate your old car to this station, and we'll turn your car into more of the programs you love. Great idea, right? Here's how.
You can visit mainpublic.org and click on support.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the best books of 2017. With me in the studio, Ari Gerson, owner of Longfellow Books, Josh Bodwell, who is executive director of the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance, and Betsy Pohl, director of the Lithgow Public Library. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Before we go to your calls and emails, Betsy, you've kind of hinted at the way it used to be at your library, the kind of space you used to have. For those of you who don't live in the Augusta area or haven't been to downtown Augusta lately, tell us what happened at the Lithgow Library.
Well, after 20 years of planning and demonstrating the need, all the pieces fell into place and we were able to expand and renovate our historic granite building. So it was an $11 million project. It was tremendous community involvement in terms of public and private financing. And now we have a rejuvenated library, which I think is one of the most beautiful spaces in the state. And I really encourage everyone to come and see it because we've tried to integrate the historic nature of the library into our new addition, which is also very beautiful. And it's becoming even more of a hub in the community than it ever was. With room to breathe and space for programs, it's really exploding.
Have you seen a difference in the number of people who come to the library?
Absolutely, yes.
What kind of numbers?
Right now, it's about a 25 to 30% increase over what it was before. And our children's programs is 52% increase in attendance there. Plus, we have a teen room that we never had before. So it's all good for the city.
Congratulations. We'll go to the calls now from Brockton Township, is this? Tony?
Brockton Township. Up in Washington County.
Yeah, I was going to say, where is Brockton Township? What are you close
to? Just north and north, halfway between Calhous and Holton on Route 1.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for calling. What book do you want to recommend?
Birds Without Wings by Louis de Bernier. He's got a Francophone name. He's an Englishman. It was published in 2005. It's precisely accurate historical fiction. It's centered on a small town in Anatolia during the period of the decline of the Ottoman Empire and the rise of Ataturk. And it's very relevant.
Oh, great. Tony, your call is cutting in and out a little bit. So you said Birds Without Wings by what's the first name? Somebody, Bernier?
Louis de Bernier. And it's great. He's been compared to Tolstoy and Dickens. I think he's better than both of them.
Thank you. Thank you so much for calling in with that recommendation. We'll move on to John calling from Arundel. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you for having me. The book I would like to recommend, I shamelessly admit, is my book. I'm the author. It's called Sign of the Apocalypse. And it has nothing to do with apocalypse per se, but it is a compendium of observations and quotes that I have composed and put upon my 4x7 foot internally illuminated portable marquee.
Oh, John, I know about your book. Now, I want you to do something for me. I want you to go onto our Facebook page and not only post the name, but post a picture or two. If you do that, okay. Okay, great. Well, thanks for calling in and good luck with your book. We'll go on to David calling from South Berwick. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hi. I'd like to recommend a book by Louise Penny called Still Life. It's a murder mystery that starts on Thanksgiving and ends about New Year's Eve.
And that's the first in Louise Penny's Gamache series. So she just came out with her 8th in the series, which I'm reading right now. It's called Glass Houses. But I agree that starting with Still Life is the way to go if you're going to read Louise Penny.
Well, David, thanks for calling and recommending that. We have an email here from Beverly. There are so many great books to read for sheer enjoyment of the written word and to inform us about our country, our government, our politics, our culture. Here are a few books I enjoyed during 2017. A Piece of the World, One in a Million Boy, Amy and Isabel, Closer All the Time, all main authors or main themes. I also enjoyed the young adult book, The Hate U Give, maybe a more current replacement about race, for To Kill a Mockingbird in high schools. In nonfiction, I enjoyed The Gatekeepers by Chris Whipple about the chiefs of staff serving Presidents Nixon through Obama. Also, Reclaiming Conversation by Sherry Turkle about college students using texting as conversation. Very interesting. And I'm reading Strangers in Their Own Land by Arlie Russell Hochschild about the political divide between liberals and ultra-conservatives in this country. So actually, that's not Beverly, that's Jeannie. So Jeannie, thank you for the recommendation. Thoughts on any of these? Betsy says all good.
I will definitely second One in a Million Boy, Monica Wood. It's phenomenal. And I mean, Monica's always, you know, in our top five every time we put up the bestsellers for the year. She's definitely a local favorite. But that book is that book is Monica through and through.
Yeah, and in paperback this year, so a great gift book. Buy 10 copies, not one.
and Betsy, The Hate U Give, that's been getting a lot of attention. We had a guest on this program in the past year saying they think it's possibly the most important young adult book of the decade.
It's been getting a lot of press, a lot of attention, yes.
Okay. Let's see here. I'm going to try to move my cursor over here. Go to Mary in Newport. Hi, Mary. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks so much for the show. I'm calling to recommend a book called Desert Boys. It was by Chris McCormick, and it won the Stonewall Book Award for Fiction this year. And it's set in the Mojave Desert, and it's a collection of short stories with the same character going through all of them, and it's a coming-of-age kind of book. It's can be found in some libraries in the state, but I'm thinking it would be great if we could get it into the University of Maine system and Colby Bates Bowden, especially maybe of interest to the LGBT community and others. It's just really good when one of your speakers was saying people are looking for something a little lighter. This is billed as hilarious, one of the descriptions, but it's also, some of the stories are haunting as well, so I think it's a good one, and I just wanted to pass that on.
Mary, thank you so much for calling in. Desert Boys. We'll move on to, from Mary to Larry, calling from Caribou. Hi, Larry, go ahead.
Hey, Jennifer, how you doing?
Good.
My book recommendation is a nonfiction. And it's called Operation Gladio, G-L-A-D-I-O, written by DePaul Williams, L. Williams, who's an adjunct professor of humanities, as well as a journalist who's written for the Wall Street Journal and USA Today. And the subtitle of the book is The Unholy Alliance Between the Vatican, the CIA, and the Mafia. Now, the reason it's called Operation Gladio is this was the operation that was set up by the OSS and then continued under the CIA in order to have to keep communism out of Western Europe. So they used all kinds of tactics, whether it was rigging elections or creating terrorism, et cetera, et cetera. And by the way, this is documented, well documented by sources of investigative journalists and actual participants. So it also demonstrates how the CIA turned into a drug cartel over the years, because in order to fund these off-the-book operations, they had to turn to selling drugs illegally. So I thought the readers might be interested in a book like that.
Great, and I've jotted it down, and we'll add it to the list. Have any of you read this?
No.
Okay.
No, I steer away. If I read those, I'm going to become a conspiracy theorist. I have to be careful.
Thanks for the recommendation, Larry. We have a posting on Facebook from Audiophile Magazine reminding people that listening is a great way to get more reading time. Think audiobooks. Our producer, Jonathan Smith, listens to, gosh, a couple dozen a year, I think. Are any of you guys audiobook fans? Josh, you are?
I am. I think I've recommended it before, but the most recent I loved is John Ronson's So You've Been Publicly Shamed. It's read by John, who's is a very quirky, fascinating British journalist and very relevant right now.
We'll go to David calling from Southern Aroostook County. David, where in Southern Aroostook County?
Dyer Brook.
Oh, fun. Go ahead with your recommendation.
Well, I have a couple of recommendations, and I'm hoping your guests can help me out here. The first one, nonfiction, is Evicted.
Oh,
which speaks to the problem facing so many millions of Americans today, 2.5 million, 7,000 families a day evicted from their homes, something that is talked about very little. The second piece of nonfiction is Hard Chance, which I really enjoyed because it reminds me of when I came to Maine back in the early 70s, as many others did after the Vietnam War. And a number of us, through significant effort, were able to hang on. And, of course, The North Pond Hermit was a good read. And when I'm looking for something fun, I always look for a Jerry Boyle mystery.
Haha, great, David. Thank you for calling. We're going to go to Charlotte on Facebook. I wanted to mention a great middle grade read I'm reading, Maine's own Annie Sibley O'Brien's In the Shadow of the Sun, a young American on a dangerous accidental mission in North Korea. Super topical. Not an escape exactly, but definitely about escape and full of cultural details by an author who spent a lot of her childhood in South Korea. Ari, this made your list.
It did. And I, you know, in addition to all that, it's, you know, I think it's about identity. It's about the feeling of otherness. It's about, so this is about a girl who's adopted. She's Korean, and she returns to North Korea with her father and her brother, neither of whom are Korean. And there's a lot that happens after that, but this is, it's a lot about self-discovery. It's a lot about feelings of otherness. And it's great. I think it's Anne's first foray into the sort of YA middle reader area.
She's known for her children's books.
Yeah. So, it really draws on her rich history. She grew up in South Korea, if not fully, then spent a lot of time there. And so the details are rich. The cultural references are wonderful, and it's a great read.
Okay, moving on to Elaine in Surrey. Hi, Elaine. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I'd like to recommend Anthony Durr's All the Light We Cannot See, a book that I fell in love with. It alternates perspectives between a boy who was recruited by the Nazis. He's an electrical genius, and a young blind French girl during World War II. And I'm actually partial to books that are written from children's perspectives. And this was just a wonderful, suspenseful story. Thank
you. Elaine, I loved it too. And Josh, we had Anthony Durr in Portland recently, didn't we?
Yeah, he was here this spring.
In conversation with Rick Russo, right?
Yeah, Tony actually was a history major at Bowdoin. So he has some deep love for Maine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't get to go. How was that conversation?
It was like a competition between like the two nicest Pulitzer Prize winners in the world. They were just amazing and so sharp and so funny. I just want to say, anyone that loved that novel, and I loved that novel too, please go back and read Anthony Durr's short stories. They are doing things with the short story form that no one thought possible. The Shell Collector and Memory Wall are just stellar. Even if you think you don't love short stories, go read them.
If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Before we take another quick break, a word about Monday's program. We are going to talk with a Bates College sociology professor about his new book, Broke and Patriotic, about why those who are poor in America don't demand more from their government. Email your comments or questions to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet us, or post to our Facebook page. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Evergreen Home Performance, offering energy-efficient windows and insulation to help homeowners achieve year-round comfort. More at evergreenyourhome.com.
Migrants from around the world continue to make their way north across the U.S.-Canada border.
Français, anglais?
English.
English?
English.
This is Canada, right?
They're forced by an agreement between the countries to try and cross illegally. But some people on both sides are trying to change this.
Then we could ask questions, you know, why did you cross this way? Are you a security risk?
Join us for Next from the New England News Collaborative.
And you can hear Next coming up after Maine Calling at 2 o'clock. Iceland is a country rich in culture, but also of sharp contrasts, where dark winters are offset by the summer's midnight sun. If you've ever wanted to travel to Iceland, consider joining Maine Public Travel next June from the 17th to the 23rd. Experience geothermal pools, breathtaking waterfalls, and even meet up with our own Jen Rux, who will host a talk show from ROOF, Iceland's public broadcasting organization. For more information, visit mainepublic.org and click on Education or call 1-877-479-7040. That number again, 877-479-7040. Thanks.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling today on the program, The Best and Overlooked Books of 2017. We're talking about a few books from before 2017, too. Joining me today, Josh Bodwell with the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance, Betsy Pohl with the Lithgow Public Library in Augusta, and Ari Gerson with Longfellow Books in Portland. Join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. An email from Mark. First In by Gary Schroen is a great nonfiction of our getting into Afghanistan within weeks of the 9/11 attack. This is a real account of our CIA at work. Ari, you mentioned that people like light books. Are there still people really interested in trying to figure out how we are where we are? I mean, the political books,
yeah,
books by
and,
the military.
You know,
and
there's, you know, I think every, it feels like every week there's another journalist publishing another book about the election or about the Trump administration. No, it's hugely popular. I think that it's become a little bit overwhelming in terms of determining what's accurate, what's not, what's really going to be insightful versus not. I think it's just the sort of category is shaking itself out a little bit right now. But yeah, hugely popular.
We'll go to Eric calling from the Belgrade Lakes region. Hi, Eric.
Hi. I read a book I'd like to recommend. The title is Head of Falls. It's by Earl H. Smith. He's a Waterville, Maine native. It covers the years when he was in high school, 54 to 57. Earl H. Smith went on to become dean of students at Colby College for his career. And the book he writes about, I guess, is about the children the teenagers he went to high school with. But he brings in all the ethnic relations. And the title, Head of Falls, refers to the tenement district in Waterville, where a lot of Arab-speaking and French-speaking immigrants lived for 50 years, and the tensions as well as friendships between them. And I found it a very satisfying novel. It brings in a lot of the history of Waterville when it was an industrial center. And it's about an area which was demolished, all of its factories and all of its tenement houses and urban renewal in the 60s. So it's got a little bit of a lot of history, I would say, tied into a very satisfying fictional story.
Oh, this is great, Eric. Thanks for the recommendation. I suspect one can find Head of Falls at the Lithgow Public Library.
I think so. I know his previous book, The Dam Committee, D-A-M, is there. And that when Earl wrote that book, there was a lot of local interest because people thought that, you know, he was naming people in the town and people were sort of scouring it for gossipy clues, but it's kind of funny.
Eric, thanks so much for your recommendation. That's great. Beth on Facebook writes, Live and Other Consolation Prizes by Jamie Ford, a beautifully written story loosely based on an actual event of a young half-Chinese boy who is sold to make it possible for his family to eat. He's taken to Seattle, manipulated, used by adults, then eventually raffled off at the 1909 World's Fair to a group of women who changed his life. Betsy, you're nodding. Do you know this book?
I have not read it, but Jamie Ford is probably best known for a hotel on the corner of Bitter and Sweet, and he actually has been at the Lithgow Library. We featured him as part of our community read several years ago, and he gets consistently good reviews, and his books are popular in Augusta, I think maybe because his visit there.
Great. We'll move on to Joan calling from Rockport. Hi, Joan. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I'm surprised no one has talked about Bark Skins by Annie Proulx, which I found a wonderful, even historical novel about the settling of Acadia and Maine, Quebec. It's all about the timber industry and people coming from Europe and their interactions with the Native Americans. And it's a really wonderful story, and I love Annie Proulx anyway. And it's a little daunting because it's long, but it turned out to be an easier read than I expected, and because some of her writing is a little difficult in some ways to read. So I just loved it, and it's just so interesting living in Maine and understanding from the 1600s up until the 1950s and 60s how the timber industry started here and also then expanded to the West.
Great. Well, thanks for the recommendation, Joan. And we're going to move to Brooke from Cumberland. Hi, Brooke. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. I would love to recommend actually a children's book to parents. It's called The Name Jar by Yang Suk Choi. And it's about a little girl named Yoon Hai who moves from Korea to the U.S. And she's kind of grappling with nerves about going to a new school, of course, but also having the students not be able to pronounce her name. So it's a really kind of great story about her journey, making new friends, kind of grappling with her own identity. And I think it teaches some really awesome lessons kind of at a young age about not only diversity, but also cultivating empathy at such a young age. Great book.
All right. Well, that's going on the list as well, Brooke. Thank you so much for your recommendation. Janice, an email, writes, Queen Bee by Phyllis Austin, a biography of Roxanne Quimby, a very timely read with the establishment of the Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument. It is amazing how hard Roxanne worked to start Burt's Bees, and Miss Austin was a wonderful reporter about the Maine environment. So another great recommendation there. Let's see, we're going to go to John calling from Palermo. Hi, John, go ahead. John.
Recommend a book by Dan Rather. Knights of Questions on Patriotism. And it's a very short book and a very easy read, and I think it's quite uplifting.
So I'm sorry, your phone cut out a little bit. What Unites Us? And it's by Dan Rather.
Yes.
Great.
Dan Rather, and actually it's written in conjunction with Elliot Kirshner. And it's Reflections on Patriotism, of a very, very easy read, not a huge book. And I've been reading it to my wife every night, almost finished it now. It's just a very uplifting book.
Thank you, John, for your recommendation.
Come back, Dan Rather. We need you.
A tweet from Pierre in Brunswick. The name of the Wind and the Wise Men's Fear by Patrick Rothfuss. Hands down the best written fantasy story on par, if not better, than the Lord of the Rings trilogy. So the author is Patrick Rothfuss.
You might get some angry posts about that.
Really? Why?
Better than Lord of the Rings?
No, it's it's hugely
steep.
Popular. I haven't actually read him, but we have a couple of staff who love him at the store.
Okay, great.
So yeah, his
you've heard the name, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, in the sort of sci-fi fantasy space, he's fantastic.
Sci-fi fantasy is sort of having it's having a big day, isn't it?
I don't know that it ever stopped. I mean, I think there's, that is a demographic that is loyal. There's great writers, there's a lot of, there's a lot of serial, sort of books out there. I think it's an ever expanding category. We never have enough room for it, I'll tell you that much. every book is 1,200 pages.
Right. Plus, there's so many crossover books now, or genre melding books. Fantasy and sci-fi sometimes spill over into other genres. You know, the dystopian novel and, you know, the Middle Kingdom type stuff. You know, it's all
hard to cross-reference sometimes, right?
Yes.
Thank you very much, Frank. We'll go to Maureen, who's calling from Cape Elizabeth. Hi, Maureen. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. How are you today?
Great.
Hey, so I'm calling. I was listening to your show, and I just had to, like, pull over and tell everybody about a bunch of books that we're reading. I'm a nurse at May Medical Center, and we have a book club. And right now, we're totally reading all of, like, World War II, more so women's roles in World War II. So I would recommend The Lilac Girls. That is by Martha Lee. The Alice Network. The Nightingale by Christine Hanna. We've all just been thrilled by the power that women had back then, and I never knew about half of the things that they accomplished and how the majority during World War II was the women that were back home tending to the families and everything. They were the major winners there, and it was just amazing. We just find the strength that all the women had back then that as nurses we're kind of like, wow, I wonder if we would be doing that if we were back in the day. You know, it kind of makes you visit your strengths and your weaknesses. So I just really wanted to recommend a few of those books.
Thank you so much for calling in. I know that The Nightingale is one of the sort of great big hits of the past few years.
Yeah, and there's a lot of nonfiction books that are coming out about women's roles in World War II. There's a book about women codebreakers. There's, of course, Hidden Figures that the movie was based on, and there's several others that are coming out, one called Radium Girls, too, that I've read about.
There you go, Maureen. Some more books for your book club. Let's see here. From Richard, I'm interested in creating an honorary librarian program that would parallel the National Library of Congress program. Do you know about that?
No.
No, well, we'll give you his email after the program. We'll go to Caitlin calling in from Maine. Hi, Caitlin. We're in Maine.
Hi, I'm actually in Bangor, Maine right now.
Go ahead. What's your recommendation?
Hi, so my book is, it's called Brooklyn Encounters, and it's by John Simons. And I actually happened to come across this book on Amazon, and I found out that he is actually from Waterboro, Maine. And the book is basically a small book with various short stories in it about a Mainer who moved here from Brooklyn. And it just has a lot of really great life lessons. And it's just a really wonderful book. And I think that people would genuinely enjoy it. And I actually also found out that he writes for the Waterboro Reporter currently. And he also writes some really great stories in there as well.
Great. So John Simons, Josh, yet another Maine author?
Yeah, not a name I know of. That's very interesting.
Well, you'll have to get him on board, right?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Thank you, Caitlin, for the recommendation. We'll go to Dunbar from Belfast. Hi, Dunbar. Go ahead.
Are you there, Jennifer?
I am. What's your favorite book?
Well, I would like to share with your listening audience Small Great Things by Jodi Picoult. I don't know if they've heard of it or not, I'm sure. But Jodi Picoult is a young lady from New Hampshire, and this particular book is just wonderful, and it talks about racism from a perspective that we just normally wouldn't be able to do. She comes to it from different angles, and her character development is just wonderful. And I just felt that this time in age in our society, it's really a very, very interesting read, and it's educational. So I strongly urge people, if they're thinking, folks, to have a read.
Dunbar, thanks so much. Jodi Picoult, popular.
She's always very popular. She does a great job with taking social issues and exploring all the different facets of them. I have to admit, I took this book out and I started reading it, but it was right after what happened in Charlottesville, and I just did not want to live inside the head of a white supremacist, even for one chapter. So, but I may very well circle back and read it another time.
Well, Dunbar, thank you for your recommendation. It's going to be our last recommendation of the program. Everything that has been mentioned today, if I can read my handwriting, will be on a list in a little while on our Facebook page. Feel free to add to that list on our Facebook page. Thank you all for being here today. The voice you just heard, Betsy Pohl, the director of the Lithgow Public Library in Augusta. Also here, Ari Gerson, owner of Longfellow Books in Portland, and Josh Bodwell, executive director of the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance. John Keimel ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives by visiting mainecalling.org. Today's show will be broadcast again tonight at 7. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and by Cindy Hahn. Monday on the program, a new book about being poor and patriotic. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.